The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
It's another Wednesday. That means it's time for Mission Minded. We like to keep your mind on your mission. Your mission, your mind. I cannot do it without Michael Coleman. He's the executive director of the Jimmy Hill Mission. He's been there, what, three, 4 years now?
Yeah, coming up on 3 years, yeah.
It's hard to believe time flies. You started with the Jimmy Hill Mission about the same time I started Tony Curry Radio, so we have something in common here.
That's right.
And we always come up with some really interesting things to get into, and I think it's fun because, you know, say you have a great product or, in your particular case, a great cause. You have a great site or, in some particular cases, if you're just starting your business, a great brick and mortar. You have either some capital in your coffers, or you have some donations already in store. So what could go wrong? You're starting this business or this non-for-profit, you're all good to go. You got the three major things. What could possibly go wrong, right? So I did a little research, and I saw through Bloomberg, and I don't know what your numbers are for non-for-profits, and maybe you have some of these. But 20% of all businesses fail within the first year, 45% fail within the first 5 years, and 67% fail within 10 years. I think a lot of people starting a non-for-profit or a business would like to think they get 10 years out of it, but it may be 10 really, really rough years. Your thoughts on just some of those numbers right off the bat?
Yeah, it's really not surprising. And I would tell you because it's so interesting. I had a program before that I would have people come to the graduation. And I had one guy come up to me one time and he goes, you know, I'm not even really sure what this program is. And he pointed to one of our graduates and he said, but if that's what you're producing, then I want to be a part of that program, you know. And so he got very excited because he saw the change in somebody's life, transformation. And that draws people who care about other people and want better communities. And so that drew him to us. And you see that's a very common thing. What they don't see is the starting point, the brokenness. And when you delve into that in the amount of commitment to people and the amount of service and the emotional struggle and the emotional toil that it takes on you. And of course, that's whether you own your own business or not, whether it's not for profit or not. I mean, if you go in the restaurant business, if you want to succeed, what do you got? You got to be at the restaurant. You got to be there when it opens. You got to be there when it closes. And so there's blood, sweat, and tears that are poured into these ideas and people's passions. And unfortunately, a lot of people go down a pathway and they recognize, hey, I may be a great chef, but you know what I can't do? I can't run a business. Mm-hmm. I can't effectively communicate with the public. I've seen nonprofit leaders who lock themselves in their offices and they're great grant writers. But I'm dealing with an agency right now that's all they have. So they have no non-discretionary income. In other words, the only money they can spend is what's allowed for them in the grant, which means they can't hire. They don't have any money to hire additional help if it's not covered in a grant. So they recognize they're doing the work all the time and it just becomes burdensome and that joy is ripped from them. Excitement, you know, is not sustainable. And so people enter into it, going all the way back to what we talked about when we very first started this program, you know, people enter into these situations without a long-term plan, without a long-term vision, without understanding what their place is in the community and how to make things like that work. They fall in love with either the idea of owning their own business, being their own boss, all of those kind of things, but that all comes at a tremendous price. And some people just don't have the shoulders to bear that responsibility. It doesn't make them bad people. It's just not how they're wired.
Well, and I think I can speak from experience here because I sat behind a microphone for 40 hours a week and got paid every 2 weeks, and I got paid quite well, thank you very much. And then, of course, when I went off and did my own thing, I started Tony Curry Radio. And I don't know at this point in my life, in my business life, whether I'm a good business person or not. I'm an extrovert. I like to meet with people. I'm trying to collaborate with things. I've got pride that's involved there that I've certainly had to put in check because you have to ask a lot of favors and you have to ask for a lot of resources. But yeah, to run a business from top to bottom is really, really, really difficult. It's incredibly challenging. Let me ask you this, and I want to generalize this a little bit. You don't ever go into a business idea, and again, we're talking about businesses and non-for-profits here, but you don't ever go into a business thinking it's going to fail because you are passionate about it. Maybe you do have some capital. Maybe you have some investors behind you. You do have the brick and mortar. You have everything you need in place, and now it's just time to let people know who you are, what you do, and start making money. Do you ever, prior to opening a business, give yourself a timeline to be successful? And what I mean by that is when I started this business, I thought, I'm going to go 3 years and we're going to see what happens. After 3 years, if it ain't flying, I'm going to have to go on to something else. Well, my 3rd year anniversary is coming up next Friday. And I feel like sometimes I'm walking without a Jesus hook on an 80-story girder. And I'm just like walking the fine line. Sometimes I feel like I'm about ready to fall off. Other times I feel like I'm safe. But I feel like I'm successful enough now, and I've tasted some success. That carrot's been dangling in my face for 3 years now that I feel like I'm going to make it. But going into a business plan, do you ever put any doubt into your mind, or do you give yourself a timeline as a business owner?
Yeah, so my approach is not a timeline, but there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I mean, some sort of benchmark, okay, I'm going to totally reassess. I think a better formula, although it's not used very often, I think really is doing the constant assessment along the way and surrounding yourself with people who will speak truth into your life. And so a lot of people, that's why you see when they're failing at a business, you see them working hard, but they're not talking to anybody about why their business is failing. You know, they just work harder. They just put their head down. They just try to push on through. And I'll tell you what I think that comes from, at least a lot of it. I've been through this myself. When I started Hope Inspired Ministries down in Montgomery, Alabama, and on a wing and a prayer, and it literally was on a prayer, invested my money, and, 6 months into it, we were almost broke. And what I found myself doing was looking at every situation that was, let's just say, in the gray area. So here's a potential funding area. And I would say, oh, okay, well, this will probably come through.
Yep.
I was overly optimistic about every possibility because that's where my heart was.
Yeah.
I wanted it to come true. And it was really when I got some people in my life that said, Michael, listen, it might come through or it might happen, but let's think this through from a risk assessment. You know, what you're saying is this funding might come out, but there's a high risk that it's not. So how do we minimize that risk? How do we address some of those issues so you confront them before they become emergencies or before your organization or your business, or, and many people, their lifelong dream that they've invested their life savings into, before that all goes up into flames, man, bring somebody around and just talk about the struggle and say, hey, I need people in my life that will come and look at it and just give me your honest assessment about where we are. It may be painful, but it's what is necessary to be able to move forward in a healthy way.
It is crazy. He's Michael Coleman, the executive director of the Jimmy Hale Mission. It's a show called Mission Minded. It runs at noon and 7 every Wednesday. And, of course, you can go to our Spotify podcast platform and check out multitudes of former and archived episodes. They're fantastic. You listen to as many as you want. Again, search Tony Curry Radio or Mission Minded on Spotify, and you can see all of it. It drives me crazy, and it makes me sad to see, and I've had two very good friends of mine that had the capital, and they're like, listen, even if we don't make one dime, we're good for 6 more months. And 6 months went into it, and they didn't make a dime, and they closed up. And I saw the blood, sweat, and tears, and the passion, and how hard they worked to open up these establishments, and were closed within 6 months. And I'm like, it's almost like going into a marriage and having a divorce within a year. I'm like, how is this even possible? I mean, how is it possible that you were so passionate and so into this thing, and for whatever reason, they always want to say it was one particular thing, whether it was advertising or maybe the food wasn't quite right or maybe the passion was. What normally is the big thing? What's the number one thing, if you can put your finger on one thing, that most businesses or non-for-profits fail right off the bat?
Well, so I don't have anything to statistically back this up, but I'm going to put it into terms that I think anybody can identify with, whether you're own a business or a nonprofit, working a nonprofit or not. when you want to do something, it is very difficult to convince people otherwise. Have you ever seen a young woman who looks at a train wreck of a man and convinces herself that she can fix him?
Yeah.
And you bring the mother in, you bring the sister, you bring her best friend, you bring her father. Everybody's pouring into her saying, look, let's step back from this and just look and look at this situation as much as we can in an unemotional way. Well, those very feelings get brought in when it's something we want to do. I have myself looked at business models and said, oh, I really feel like I could thrive in this. And I would start on an idea, and people would be saying, wow, there's some real red flags, Michael. And I didn't want to hear the red flags.
Yeah.
I did not want to take the time. I didn't want to do the hard work up front and be sober-minded about what I was getting into. And that goes back to what I was saying about, I looked at everything through these great optimistic lenses and just trusted that everything was going to work out. And what happens is, people are not prepared for failure. And so when they, and again, this is not a lazy, when you're an entrepreneur, people think, oh, I'm my own boss, but people who own businesses know, I mean, you're giving it everything you've got and you're putting it all on the line to make this successful. So it's not a work ethic issue. It is, but have you ever seen, there's an old saying that says, when all you have is a hammer, when the only tool you have is a hammer, then you treat every problem like it's a nail.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, I'm going to work hard at this and it's not working. I don't know anything else. So I'm going to work extra hard. I'm going to work more hours. It's like you said with friends that you knew, they went into an idea. It's not working. Hey, I'm going to give it 6 more months and I'm just going to keep working at it without making adjustments. Now, I will tell you how I incorporate that in the nonprofit world. And I think there's some of the human side of this as well. I think I spoke in an earlier version. You cannot be a leader, whether it's a business owner or leading a nonprofit or leading anybody. You cannot be afraid to fail and still be effective. Again, I should take the time to look this up because I use it all the time of who said it. But they said, I never lose. I either win or I learn.
Yes.
Now, so take that idea. If you were a business owner and you were starting a restaurant, and so you're very optimistic, you've got a lot of energy. Oh, you just can't wait. And let's say the first night, you get some customers and you maybe build some excitement, and then maybe it kind of wanes a little bit. And so you're like, okay, well, you know, maybe people are not ready to really face, you know, maybe a Palestinian cuisine was not the right fit. It sounded exciting. I'll give you a true story. My son-in-law went into a partnership with a friend of his he grew up with who has an Indian background. And they had a very neat idea. It was a fusion restaurant mixing Southern-style cooking with Indian food.
Okay.
And so they would take things like, instead of hummus, they would use black-eyed peas to mix in the Indian dishes. It was really interesting. And the truth of the matter is, it got a lot of positive reviews from people who ate. But when you look at their model, it was at night and it was in downtown Columbus, Georgia, and it was not in a well-lit area, and it was attached to a motel. And they didn't serve lunch where all the downtown foot traffic was. Columbus at the time, when the end of the day happened, everybody, you know, downtown became a ghost town. So people did not want to come into a darkened area where they thought their safety was at risk to try this Indian fusion restaurant. And so as hard, and he was a hard worker, but as hard as they worked and as much money, as many resources they put in that, they simply could not make it. But the truth of the matter is, if they would have stepped back and done that analysis, they could have seen the red flags even before going into that project.
Yeah, the old saying, build it and they will come, is not always true, but I've also heard the three most important things are location, location, location. Michael Coleman, the executive director of the Jimmy Hill Mission, joins us here from Mission Minded. This is a show. It airs every Wednesday live here on Tony Curry Radio. And again, go back and listen to all the archived episodes. They're fantastic. Through Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio or Mission Minded. You know, it's interesting. My daughter just turned 10, and she loves Starbucks, probably because her mother loves Starbucks. And I asked her just yesterday, I said, do you know how long Starbucks has been around? And she's 10, so I didn't expect her to really know. She said, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. But you ask the regular Joe on the street, how long has Starbucks been around? Normally they say 10 to 15 years. Starbucks is 51 years old. It started in 1971, and it's taken them 50 years to get to this point. Something that I continually see, and I always say it's in God's time, right? And God will get you as far as you need to be, right? I mean, you can pray all you want. Doesn't mean you're going to have a successful business. It may mean you're going to have a bigger business down the road. You got to stay faithful to that, and certainly prayer is a big part of it. But I've seen it in TV shows. I've seen it in music, and I've seen it in businesses. Sometimes the timing is off. I've seen this so many times where someone will have a wonderful idea and they give up on it just a tad too early. And then a year later, someone else has taken their idea and just run with it. How often do you look at timing when it comes to building a business and starting a business or a non-for-profit?
Yeah. So perfect. The first thing when you started asking that question that popped in my mind is the show Seinfeld.
Yes.
I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. But if you go back and look at the first three seasons, you can see because the humor and the twist in and the writing, it was so different than the normal rhythms that you see in sitcoms. And several executives at NBC wanted to cancel it. And it was only Brandon Tartikoff, who personally liked it, who insisted that they keep it on. And so what they ended up doing was they kept moving it around. They moved it to Sunday nights. It was on Wednesday nights. They couldn't find a home for it. He said, but once we get the right groove, if you will, but he believed in it. So that's an example of somebody who believed in an idea where others didn't. And look, there's a million of those as well. And once it found its footing, then it became the all-time greatest. Netflix offers them, you know, they get millions of dollars of residuals. Mm-hmm. Of course, none of the cast ever have to work again if they didn't choose to. More money than you can imagine. And it was all over an idea the humor and the approach was, it was struggling to find its footing. Now, look at the tension that exists. Going back to the optimism, so you have a restaurant owner let's say somebody wants to write a movie and it's not clicking. And so the question is, do I need to change something or is it something that's just not in the right time? So in other words, Seinfeld didn't necessarily need to change, although I thought the writing got better as they went along. It wasn't that Seinfeld needed to change. It was a new idea, and they just had to continue to expose it to the audience until it found its footing. So it requires a lot of wisdom, but more than just wisdom is you've got to make yourself vulnerable to critiques, listen to those critiques, and not from an emotional standpoint. Look, I invite people into discussions all the time. I think that's a much healthier, and it bothers me just from a personal selfish standpoint. When I think I've got a killer idea and somebody just craps all over it, you know, and says, oh, this isn't going to work. Now, internally, I have this thing. Okay. I believe it will. And I have my gut instinct. So I think it will. And so then I have this tension. I'm like, okay. And just human natures, I want to discount what they're saying. But in reality, every time I've just sat and listened, it doesn't mean that I move away from that idea completely. But I take in what they're saying and I try to sharpen the idea.
Yeah.
When I came to understand that I'm not the keeper of good ideas. because it doesn't come from me doesn't mean it's not going to fit my ultimate goal, which is to provide the best service we can, the most free to our clients to help lift them up. And so I may get an idea started and somebody comes along and hones that and makes it sharp. So, but that I will tell you, just doing that and people making themselves vulnerable to that criticism and criticizing their ideas and maybe even criticizing the restaurant. Have you ever seen that show? I don't know the name of it, but it's about saving bars.
Yeah, I sure have.
Yeah. So, I mean, that guy is brutal. Mm-hmm. I've seen him just rip owners up and down, and you can tell they don't like it one bit.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he helps them save the bar. It's not a bad, necessarily bad location. It's they don't tend to customers' needs. The food's not fresh. All that. So he comes in and just brutally and basically says, "Hey, if you want to save your dream, you better shut up and listen to me."
Yep.
And sometimes that's necessary because you've got people who are so sold on the idea. They're just going to keep doing it until they drop or they lose every last dime.
You mentioned Seinfeld, and I was thinking of two other shows when you mentioned that, WKRP in Cincinnati and The Brady Bunch. Both those shows lasted about 2 to 3 years when they first aired and didn't do squat, got canceled. And then for some reason, when they went into syndication almost 10 years later, they took off. And they're still on television. Then they tried to bring them back as new shows, and they weren't ready for it because that the timing just wasn't right. Bloomberg wrote a very interesting article. I want to go through these real quick, and I want you to comment on each one of them. And you've gone through, I think, almost all of these. But 7 reasons why non-for-profits fail, and feel free to comment on each one of them here as we get about 10 minutes left. Number 1, empty optimism. You just brought it up. Or pie-in-the-sky dreams with the proper ingredients to bake a pie.
Yep. And I would tell you, since I've started a nonprofit, lots of times I'm kind of known in Montgomery, especially because I spent more time there where I started a nonprofit. When somebody came with a nonprofit idea, they'd always say, go talk to Michael. And I made a commitment. I've said this in other shows. I made a commitment that I want to make sure I help people because I want to speak truth into their life in order to help them either hone their idea or help them see, understand what's coming. And so they're not blindsided and lose time and energy and money. And I cannot begin to tell you the number of times somebody's come in and said, oh, I've got this idea. And I walk them through, you know, the fundraising aspect, where that idea fits in our community as far as needs. And almost without fail, there's been a few exceptions, but almost without fail, they walk out of their office and you never hear from them again in terms of the nonprofit world. And I am absolutely not trying to crush their dreams. I'm really trying to help them. And if it's a true need in our community and they're coming to address that need, hey, I'll bend over backwards to help support them. But lots of times somebody says, oh, I love mentoring. I'm going to start my own nonprofit. And I remember telling somebody, I said, there's already 19 mentoring. I said, I'm going to play the devil's advocate. You come to me and ask me, tell me about your plan. And so she starts talking, and right away I just interrupted her and said, listen, you're bringing the 20th mentoring program, and it may be great, it may not be, but why would I support you rather than support the other 19 that are already in place and are working? And she didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah.
And I said, that's what you're going to hear out there, and if you can't answer that, you will go nowhere.
Yeah, that goes into the number 2 spot here. Competitive blinders, or we're unique, that there's no one like us in the market. Nonprofit leaders and ministry executives are frequently insular and blind to the external changes and market forces that will be their undoing.
Yeah, and I do think it's important that nonprofits, because there are other addiction recovery for the homeless. And I do get asked that question. What's the difference between Jimmy Hale and the founder or other organizations? And one of the things I don't want to do is, because I value the other organizations, they're bringing the service to people. However, I have an internal motivation to say, how can I want to create the best program, not in comparison to others, but to provide the best service to our clients. And so because I'm not afraid to step out and try new things, we actually believe we're creating a new paradigm for how you treat homelessness and addiction. And so when people ask us, I say, well, here's what's different. We're doing things nobody else is doing at a higher level than nobody else is doing. And guess what? We don't charge anybody a dime for it. And, so you do have to stand out, But the tenant, what it usually evolves into for many nonprofits is you're fighting for the same piece of pie.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you're just not, you don't just stand up talking about you. You feel like, well, those other guys, they say they do this, but that's all just smoke and mirrors. And so that it gets into some backbiting, and I've had it done to me. And I'll be honest with you, I was guilty of some of that as well, trying to find my footing. So I've made those same mistakes. But it ultimately doesn't serve your purpose well.
Something you brought up before, it's called volumes vacuum or poor organizational development. There's little internal trust and insufficient values to guard against abuses of power, privilege, and people. You've talked about having a board, so we'll kind of pass that one over. Number four, iced innovation of the notion that our website is good enough for now. This is really interesting because I know where you used to spend a lot of your money. I know where you spend a lot of your money now. You've got to be technologically fit in order to run a business this day.
Absolutely essential. I will tell you, if you're doing a nonprofit even if it's a bad website, if you can't, if you say, tell me your website, and they go, oh, I don't have one, I have a Facebook page, then you are already, you've diminished any opportunity for that person to really get invested in what you're doing. Because if you can't build a website, because website domains are relatively cheap and they're, very user-friendly to build. I mean, you almost need no experience to put one together. And it really speaks to the status of where you are if you can't have a website. Now, with that said, this gets back to the introvert-extrovert. An introvert would rather put all the information out there and say, hey, if you want to know about us, go to our website. All the information's there. An extrovert like myself and somebody – when you're getting into relationships, because that's where your long-term donors come from is relationships. I want to be out there pressing the flesh and because I'm excited. I want to tell them about what we're doing and I want them to get involved. And so people who say, well, all the information is on the website and they just sit back and do it. Lots of times the money dries up.
Yep. It sure does. Number five, and you brought this one up, mission creep. When a corporation goes beyond its initial product line and area service, it's called brand extension, but non-for-profits is called mission creep because charities are in the business of changing the world. Their leaders often cannot seem to stop themselves from seeing every other need that is to call.
Perfect example. I was asked to come down and do a strategic plan for an agency that I'm familiar with, where I used to be. Love the people there. Great. Has a great leader. But that organization was built to offer indirect services. So if people don't understand the difference between direct service and indirect services, think of the United Way. Back in the day, the United Way was an umbrella that people could say, hey, I'm giving my money to United Way, and I'm trusting them to distribute it to the agencies that need it most. But that paradigm is rapidly going away. Because what people are saying is, hey, if I want to be involved in Jimmy Hill Mission, I don't have to go through another organization. I go right to their website and get directly to them. And so that would be an example, the United Way, of an indirect service. They're taking the money and then funneling it to the person who's actually on the ground doing the service. Well, here's the problem. The organization I'm going to go help is, in its mission statement, vision, everything else, it is an indirect service. However, there was something to do with homelessness that nobody in the community was there to do it, so they took it on themselves. And so now they went from being indirect service provider to mixing the two. Now they're providing service, and it has caused mass confusion in the community as to what this organization is about. And that's an example. Even though their hearts are in the right place, they said, well, there's nobody to give this service to and then fund them, so we're just going to do it ourselves. Their hearts were 100% in the right place. They just wanted to help the homeless. There's nothing wrong with it. But what should have happened was the board should have said, no, we are indirect service provider for the homeless. Mm-hmm. We are not going to take on that responsibility because we are not formatted to be able to take that. And exactly what you fear will happen has happened. And now I'm coming down primarily because I love them. But I'm going down there to help them kind of sort this out, because when you're in the midst of it, sometimes you can't see your way out of it. You got to have somebody coming in from the outside looking in and go, oh, here's clearly where the problem is.
Yep. Misplacing priority number one, and you mentioned this too, or forgetting who the real boss is. A successful non-for-profit knows their number one customer is their donor, and I think you've done a wonderful job. It says, when it comes to taking care of your donors, relationships, personal relationships are the king. No fancy CRM or automated gift response mechanism will ever trump a personal relationship. I think we know the answer to that. Finally, the data conundrum, which I think is really interesting, the fear of information. You've done a wonderful job at being vulnerable enough to say, listen, I really don't know how this works. Show me how it works. And it talks about how organizations have been measuring every possible statistic relating to fundraising efforts, few of enough data to guide planning, analyze management systems, or redirect underperforming programs or communications. You've done a wonderful job of that at Jimmy Hill Mission, haven't you?
Well, when you say it, it doesn't sound like I'm bragging. So.
It's true. I mean, you just got to be open to getting all the analytics and algorithmic analytics you possibly can to run your program. And I mentioned before the show here, I was on the New York Post website today, and I saw one of your videos, and there's one of your direct marketing campaigns that hit me right between the eyes. It was great.
Yeah, well, one of the things that and we are really bad in the nonprofit world about doing this is we focus on outputs rather than outcomes. So when I came here to the Jimmy Hill Mission, they were talking about how many beds they gave away, how many thousands of meals they gave away. And my question was, so what? That's good, but that cannot be what we're striving for. Well, those things are necessary, but what we're striving for is a changed life, a life that's transformed. So if we give all that away and we help somebody, but their life has not changed, then I don't think that's effective ministry and where my heart is. Let me tell you, it's very difficult sometimes to find the time to do it, but everything you do, if you look at your key task in your organization, and now this is not just nonprofit, this is anything you do, you have to ask yourself, what does success look like? And so we do that with vision statements, with mission statements, all that kind of stuff. So let's say if you say, I have five key functions of this organization in order to accomplish my mission statement successfully and move in a positive direction, these five things, whatever they are, must be done right. And we must be killing it in those five areas. Now, the question is, how do you determine if you're killing it or not? And so you have to determine you have to assign a metrics, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, you have to assign a metrics to that goal, because otherwise you have nothing to measure it again. So I've failed to do that many times in my life, and I've looked at it and I'm like, well, I think we're doing pretty good on this, right? And some people go, yeah, maybe. I mean, but there was no, and so I had a board member ask me one time, well, how do you know? And I'm like, just a gut. I mean, but they were exactly right. I had no way to prove how we were doing. And when you put metrics up and decide, okay, what does success look like? And I say, okay, if it's, lift graduation from 30% to 60%, which is very high when you're talking about addiction recovery. If that's the goal, if that's what we're striving for, now we have something that we can measure. Okay, well, hey, we got up to 40, we're making improvements, but we're not there yet. If you don't have that established goal and that metrics of what success looks like, you don't know whether you're getting better, getting worse, staying stagnant. So I think lots of times people just drift along. And then what happens is when you don't have any metrics that push you, if you don't have an internal drive to improve your vision, improve your mission statement, continue to move forward, you just do what you do every day. And after a while, you realize you're dead on the vine.
You're right. Michael Coleman, as always, a fantastic show. Mission Minded, where you mind your mission, your mind. You can hear the show every Wednesday at noon and 7 right here live on Tony Curry Radio. And, of course, if you want to listen to it on your own time, on demand, go to Spotify and search Tony Curry Radio or Mission Minded, and you can listen to all of our past episodes. Until next week, Michael, thank you so much. Great show. Appreciate you.
Hey, loved it as always.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.